Tonight we continue the study in the apostasy series that I've been talking about for, I think, about 3 weeks now. We've been talking about the great periods of God giving His people growth, and then that is followed by periods of where their man rejects God's work, and there is a division. And the word for that is called apostasy, and is translated in the New Testament as falling away. It means that part of God's people just fall away from the way that God planned. Now tonight we will study the fourth period of growth and division, and this will be the last period. This period really started in 1906, and it went up to 1952. And there was a period of tremendous growth in that period of time. From 1952 to 1980, is a horrible, horrible period of time in the Church of the Lord, and there was a great division, and this is the fourth great apostasy, or the falling away. And that's what we want to take a look at tonight. Now, tonight's sermon is going to be very simple, I hope. I really only want us to get two things. I want us to be able to see that there is a pattern. That there is a pattern of when the church or God's people does something, then you can expect something else to happen. It's kind of like if you tell your kids when they get a driver's license, "Now I want you in by midnight," because nothing good happens after midnight. They look, "Well, how do you know?" And of course, you do know because you've experienced it. And that's the thing that I want to bring forth tonight, number one. Number two, I hope to be able to make it very plain what the problem really was. Not what people say the problem was, not what we might think it was, but I want you to listen carefully to be able to see what the problem that caused the division really was. Now, in our last sermon, we studied the apostasy from 1849 to 1906. This was back in the last century when Alexander Campbell thought about the idea of getting a board of directors and establishing a missionary society, which was a human institution. Now, we've already pointed out that right before that, that the church was the fastest growing religion in the world. And so Campbell thought, how can we make it grow faster? So he conceived an idea of how the churches could all put their money into one pool and then use that big pool in order to do something. And so he conceived and set up this board of directors, which was just a human institution. Nowhere in the world do you ever find anything like that, but it's the churches putting their money in there and letting this human institution take control and make decisions about how it will happen. Well, they did that. And then there was a great period of argumentation about it. And then some of the people said, "Well, if we can have a missionary society without Bible authority, then we can also have other things without Bible authority." And of course, that logic is good. That is true, if you can. But of course, the truth of the matter is that the missionary society was wrong. And what they should have done is to say, "Okay, we've overstepped our bounds, and we will do away with this human institution." But they were not going to do that. They kept it. And then they went ahead and said, "We can do other things." It so happened that the two things that they really wanted to do, and this was the preachers, they wanted to use the word reverend as a title. So they started using that term. And people cried out, "You don't find where they're talking about Reverend Paul or Reverend Peter or setting the preachers above other people and starting a clergy." And well, if we can have the missionary society, if we can do that without Bible authority, we can do this. And they did it. And then some people said, "Well, we can also use instrumental music." Everybody agreed that there's not a place in the New Testament where you can read about the New Testament church using instrumental music. But if we can do these other things without Bible authority, without reading about them in the Bible, then we can do this. And so they brought in instrumental music. These three things became an issue that finally divided the church then. Now, the three major groups in that division, and there was one minor group that was in there. I want you to note the minor group. We're going to get back to it, especially next Sunday night. Now, from 1849 to 1906, I've got that gray area where it starts out gray and turns out black, and it works very slowly. And you say, well, when did the division really come? Well, somewhere in there, but it's too technical to really pinpoint. But finally, by 1906, and the reason we use 1906 is because that is the year that the government took a census, and they then looked and they said, well, it's obvious that there is a great division, no fellowship between churches of Christ and the Christian church and the disciples of Christ. And they were right. So they started taking different censuses under different names. And so we could say, well, by that year, at least it was over. So there were three major groups. And then a small group, a Christian church came out that, called itself the Christian church. And they were very, very conservative. They rejected missionary societies. They rejected the word reverend, but they kept the instrument. And they were what you would call very, very conservative, and yet in some things very liberal. We'll get back to them. That's the way the church divided. Now the same thing was repeated in our generation. All we had to do is just change the dates. Just take the dates out. Put in new dates, and from 1952 to 1980, these things happened. The same thing happened. Exactly the same thing happened in that period of time. And there was a big division. And the division came by about 1980. Now, if you say, how do you know it's 1980? I don't. I just lived through it, and I know, well, by that time, we weren't attending each other's meetings. There was no fellowship between us. I don't know, maybe in 1975, 1985. That's the reason I got that gray turning to black, that it happened so slowly that you say, when did it really happen? But there was a division and these three groups. Now, comparing the periods of the apostasy, I want us to see the pattern. In 33 AD, when the Lord established his church, up to 120, the church grew by tens of thousands, as we know from reading the New Testament. But Paul said in AD 52, the mystery of lawlessness was already working. Then in 1809, again, we've also learned that from 1809 to 1849, the church was the fastest growing religion in the world. Campbell thought that they would convert everybody in the world in those days. But there was this mystery of lawlessness. There was this people working and thinking, and how can we go beyond the Bible? And by 1849, they had conceived of the missionary society. Then our study tonight is going to be in 1906. Again, from 1906 to 1952, the Church of Christ was the fastest growing church in the world. But that didn't satisfy us. There'd been three periods of time, and so the mystery of lawlessness is already working. And in 1952, a big thing happened, and a division started. So I want to start, we'll be talking about there in 1952, starting with that, and we'll see really what caused that division. Now, the fourth apostasy beginning in 1952. We go back and we see in that period of time, churches were all happy, contented, united. We know how fast the church grew in the New Testament times. We've learned how fast the church grew, 1809 to 1849. And from 1906 to 1952, the Churches of Christ became the fastest growing church in the world. I came into the church in 1952 when I struggled and preached my first little sermon. And it was in that year I would hear other preachers and be listening. And constantly, all the time, it was brought out, we're the fastest growing religion in the world. And we're here and fastest growing. In Abilene, Texas, where I was and I went to school, one out of every 16 people was a member of the church. Can you conceive of that? In Nashville, Tennessee, it was one out of nine was a member of the church. Every other family had people in it who was members of the church. The church was growing by leaps and bounds. Congressmen were members of the church. Judges were members of the church. The church was growing by leaps and bounds in that period of time. And then in 1952, an interesting thing happens. History repeats itself. It repeats itself, and once again, men came up with a new idea in an effort to help the church preach the gospel. There were two young men who had gone from Texas to Wisconsin, I believe it was, Minnesota or Wisconsin. And they'd gone up there to try to establish church up there. And while they were up there, they got this idea. They got the idea about television. Now, the reason for that is because you've heard that television was invented in 1929, and probably was. But nobody ever saw one until 1950. 1950 is the first time you ever saw one in a store. I'll never forget the first one I ever saw walking down the street in a hardware store, and there it was in the window, and it was like seeing a miracle. And 1950 was a magic year. People could buy a television set. So these guys, 2 years later, said, why don't we have a national television program for Churches of Christ? Now, they got the idea, and I'm just telling you what they said, the arguments that they used, and that is that the Catholic Church immediately put on the Catholic Hour. And so every Sunday morning, you turn on, and there would be a priest with the Catholic Hour. And then the Baptist came on, and they then put on the Baptist Hour. And then the Lutherans put on the Lutheran Hour. And each one of them would take about an hour's time on either ABC or CBS or NBC. And so these guys said, why don't we do that? Why don't we start out and have a Herald of Truth program then? Well, there's only one problem, and that is the way they conceived of it is not found in the Bible. And this is the thing that is getting ready to cause division in the church. And we say, well, what was there wrong with that? Is there anything wrong in preaching on TV? Nope. Great idea. Anything wrong in preaching around the world? Nope. Great idea. But they came up with the same old idea that Campbell came up with, only just a little different color. Now, the cost was in the hundreds of thousands of dollars, so they needed to pool the money. No one church had that much money to sign a contract with ABC. And then these men, everybody, by the way, everybody in the church, they were totally opposed to that board of directors, that man-made institution, that missionary society. 100%. Everybody in the brotherhood, the whole church, was preaching against it. And they said, we sure don't want to do it that way. That way is unscriptural. It's not in the Bible. And it's divided the church. And so these two young men, they said, we're not going to do it in that way. So Instead of using a human institution, organization, as the board of directors, they decided to use the church and its elders. They said, instead of having this human institution, let's use a church. Because you could read about the church and its elders in the Bible. So let's use an eldership. And we'll find an eldership. So they went to Abilene, Texas, which was as I told you a minute ago, had churches all over the place. One out of every 16 people were a member of the church. And they went to the college congregation, which was right across the street from the school. And so they went there and they asked the elders there. They said, now, we feel that you men are highly educated and that you're the best ones in the brotherhood to be able to oversee this program. And we'd like for you to take it off of our hands. We've conceived it. Here's our plans. But we'd like for you to take it off and you to do it. So they said, well, okay, let us think about it. So to their credit, they thought. And they began to ask questions. And in those days, all that we had in communication was what's called gospel papers. That had a few people putting out gospel papers every week. And so they would write in there about this. And they were kind of questioning it. Do we want it? Do we not want it? And there were some older preachers that started questioning and say, wait a minute. We'd sure like to have a national radio and television program, but can that be found in the Bible the way we're doing it? And so those elders at the college church, finally they said, we don't want to have anything to do with it. So they told these two young men, both 28 years old, they said, no, we'll not touch it. So these men took it over across town to another congregation, Fifth and Highland in Abilene, and said, here's our idea. Would you take it over? Because we think you're the most highly qualified eldership. And they agreed with that and said, yeah, we'll take it over. So they took it over, and they're still operating it today. You can go online and see all about it. But they took it over. Have elders, just a local congregation, that now has elevated itself. And the way it's going to work is this. These elders will be overseers and in charge of the Herald of Truth television program. They will determine who's going to do the preaching, what stations, how much we'll pay. They make all decisions, 100%, total, complete. They sign the contract with ABC, but they can't afford it. So they ask all the other churches in the brotherhood to send them $12.50. That's the number. They said, if all the churches will send us $12.50, we can pay for this. Of course, they kept on getting bigger and bigger and bigger until now it's a massive amount. But then all of a sudden, we have one eldership and one church elevated above the others. All these other churches are sending money to put on the Herald of Truth television. Now, let me tell you, it was one of the finest programs I've ever heard in my life. The preacher was absolutely the greatest speaker I've ever heard. It was a magnificent program. And people throughout the nation was listening to it. But then there were people saying, where do we find this in the Bible? It seems like it's the same thing as that board of directors, that missionary society. We couldn't find it in the Bible. Where do we find this in the Bible? And so people started going back and forth, and arguments came up, and I'll deal with it as we go on. But here it is, they said, no, this is This is what we're going to do. One of the first things that happened was they went on the station, and I'll never forget it. It makes chills run up my back just to hear it. It was so good. It started out, "Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Herald of Truth, presented to you by the Fifth and Highland Church of Christ in Abilene, Texas." And now our speaker is, and they went on. Well, some of these other churches down here who had been sending money, they wrote and said, "Wait a minute. You're taking all the credit for this program, but we're paying for it." That doesn't sound right to me. And a Highland elder said, "Well, that's right." So then they changed it. And they said, "Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Herald of Truth, brought to you by the Churches of Christ throughout the United States." And then some other people wrote in and said, "Wait a minute. These other churches throughout the United States, they're paying for it. It's their work. But you're overseeing it. It's your work. Everything is yours." And they said, "Well, that's right." And so they discussed it. And nobody could come up with an answer, because both positions are right. Now, the reason both positions are right is because this program is wrong. It just gives you an idea that you can't make it right. Whose work is it? Is it Highland's work, and everybody pays for it? Or is it everybody's work who pays for it, but it's Highland oversees it? It's not found in the Bible. That's where the problem comes in. And so all of a sudden, the argumentation started. It's not there. There's no Bible authority for this thing. For what? Preaching on the TV? No. No, there's no Bible authority for one eldership to elevate itself above other churches, and other churches taking their funds and sending them to this one eldership, and this one eldership overseeing their funds. There's no Bible authority for that. Now, I can say goodnight and go home right now. That's it. I'm going to do a little bit more talking. But that's it. That really is it. Now, I want to stop and ask you a question. Do you begin to see a little bit, just a little bit, of what happened back in the first century period of time? Do you remember back there when I was talking about in 120 A.D. they elevated one bishop above the other elders? And then they elevated these two bishops would get together, they would be over. And then those bishops would get, do you remember that chart I gave you? And it ended up in the Pope. Are you beginning to see? Now, I'm not saying this is Roman Catholicism. I don't think, no way, but it took them 600 years back there. But I just want you to see. I just want you to see, yeah, it's the same seed. It's kind of like a dad telling the kid, "Be home by midnight. Nothing ever happens good after midnight. Elders, behave yourself. Nothing ever happens good when you elevate yourself above the local congregation." That's the reason I spent that whole sermon on that, showing how the New Testament church went astray. Now, this was the beginning of what is called sponsoring churches. Now, that's not some name we gave them. That's a name they called it. They said, "Well, it's a sponsoring church. It's not our work, and it's not your work, but we're the one that's sponsoring your work. It's a sponsoring church." That's a pretty good name. That's true. But there's still just one thing wrong with it. You don't find it anywhere in the Bible even close to being in the Bible. So then we got into discussion, and it took a long time and to people's mind to get straightened out. Where is the authority? And they found it over there. Since it can't be found in the Bible, they come up with using the same old argument again. And what was the argument they used to prove it? They said, well, we're already doing it with orphan homes, so it must be all right. What do you mean? Well, the church had been involved in this. Some elderships had started some orphan homes. And everybody loves little orphans. So nobody got upset about it. But this eldership over here, they would go out and they would start an orphan home. And the way they did it, oh my, for years I saw this. And it happened in the papers regularly. I see it every week. Churches say, we're going to start an orphan home. Please send us the money. Because we need to buy a building. We need to hire a nurse. We need to hire parents to take care of the orphans. We need X amount of money. Please send us your money so we can start this orphan home. Church after church after church after church after church after church after church. You can't believe it. It was unbelievable. One time, I'll tell you this story. I promised myself I'm not going to get off and telling stories that I've experienced and get boring. But I was down in California, hold a meeting, and the preacher said, would you like for me to drive you up and show you this orphan home that so-and-so was going to start but didn't work out? And I'd remembered it, and I, yeah. And I'd remember this church. They said, now, send us some money. And so they spent a year or so, and people, churches sent in money. They got plenty of money. They bought a park, beautiful area in California, several acres. And they built a nice home to take care of the orphans. And they hired a nurse. And they hired the parents. Then they sent out word, send us your orphans. We don't have any orphans. We have the home, we have the money, we have the place. We even have the nurse hired. Send us your orphans. No orphans. And the next week they'd beg more. Send us your orphans. And the next week, 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 next week. It went on for months. And they couldn't get an orphan. Not one orphan. It shows you the need that they had for orphans. But it was emotional. Not an orphan. Finally, they closed it. He drove me up through it, and my, they've given it to the state of California now. And you drive through this wooded area, beautiful park that's up there. But that's the way things were going. So they said, now we're doing this with orphans, so we can do it with preaching. That justifies the herald of truth. Well, again, that's a good argument. Yep. Or we have to come back and say, you know, I've been inconsistent. You know, we don't have authority to have a church to set itself up to become the orphan caring church for the brotherhood and have the churches send us the money and we take charge of it and we do all of this. But there's no authority in the Bible for that. And so we'd point that out. No, there's no authority in the Bible. That got us in trouble. You say what? Well, to say there's no authority in the Bible for an eldership to set itself up to preach or to take care of these orphans in here. So these sponsoring churches, they just kept right on going. And they began to multiply in order to do everything. You can't believe it. I'm just letting this one congregation go up. There were dozens, as I'll show you. A congregation would put itself out. We're going to become the sponsoring church for preaching in Germany. Any church that wants to preach in Germany, send us the money and we'll hire the preacher and we'll send it over to Germany. Another say we're going to be the sponsoring church for Italy, and another for the Philippines and Mexico, and on and on down the line. One day it came out, we're a sponsoring church for the cows in Korea, for Korea. And so everybody said, what's cows for Korea? Well, this church, these elders, said, you know, over in Korea, we just got through fighting in that dumb war over there, and said, the brethren over there need meat. Now, if we send them money, they'll go down and they'll buy the meat and they'll eat it, and that's all there is. But if we could send them cows, they could breed the cows, and then they could just keep eating cows. So they then were going to buy a herd of Angus cattle, put them on a boat, and send them to Korea. But of course, it takes a lot of money to buy a herd of Angus cows, and then to ship them all the way across the ocean to Korea. So they became the sponsoring church for that. I'm not kidding. And it just went on and on. And other churches would set up hospitals. And it just went on and on. Here's a little chart that a guy made back in those days about some churches down in that area. And I happen to keep the chart. It's 50, 60 years old now. Here the other day, I put it on the computer. And he's showing, here's how they did their money. Highland and Abilene sent up to Broadway in Lubbock, and Central down in Houston, they were the big congregations. Broadway would send out to East Side would send over to Idaloo would send money to Italy. Then Broadway would send to Germany and Mexico and Manhattan, and then you can see where they were sending it. Finally, the big church down in Central and Houston sent up to Broadway. Broadway sends down to Highland in Abilene. Highland sends up, and I couldn't read that name, so I put question marks. And then over to Portland, and then to Augusta. And then Central sends over to Highland, some more money over to Highland, and up to the Gunner home. And it's just a little one, little chart. But I thought 50 years ago, that'd be interesting. I think I'll keep that. Now, you're not going to believe what I'm telling you. You're not going to believe this chart. One day, a church in Oklahoma set themselves up as the sponsoring church for sponsoring churches. They said there's so many sponsoring churches that nobody knows where to send money anymore. If you wanted to send money to Alaska, what church is sponsoring Alaska? Nobody knows. There needs to be a sponsoring church, and we'll become that. We'll set ourselves up. And we'll be the sponsoring church, and we'll keep track of all of the places where sponsoring churches are sponsoring things. And that happened. That's true. Now, this is the type of organization we opposed. This thing down here, this centralization. But guess what they charged us with? And what confused the thing so much? They said the Annies don't believe in caring for orphans or preaching the gospel. I've heard that. I've sat right there and listened to them. I sat right there and heard a man one time say, Lowell Williams doesn't believe in giving a dime to the orphans. He doesn't believe in giving a dime to the preaching of the gospel. I sat in an audience where the guy who was a speaker for the Herald of Truth came up to Portland. He came up and he said, we're going to unmask them. He got up and he preached. He got out here, and I'm not going to do it because it's so ugly, but he'd take his fingers and come down and he'd pull his eyes down to where he could see the white of his eyes, and he looked like a grotesque. He said, I'm going to tear their mask off. I'm going to show you what kind of horrible people they are. He said, here's what would happen. Let's suppose that there's a little boy, 12 years old, and his parents died, and he doesn't have anything to eat and drink, and he's wobbling down the street, and he comes up on the porch of this church building where the gospel preacher is. And the preacher said, what's wrong, son? He said, I'm hungry and cold. And the preacher said, are you a Christian? Your wife a Christian? No. Get out of here! And stood up there and he started kicking. And he kicked. That preacher, kick that kid. Kick him out. Get out of here. We don't take care of orphans. So a little kid walked across the street, walked up to a Catholic church building. The priest came out and said, son, took him in his arms, said, come in my office. I have some warm milk and cookies, and I'll take you and give you home. Now, who would you rather be? Would you rather be one of these anti-preachers or a Catholic priest? I sat there, and I knew he was talking about me, and I changed my mind, decided I'd rather be a Catholic. It's just terrible. I was telling Richard Radke one time. Richard said, I'll tell you what happened to me. He said, I was up in Alaska, and he said they were up there, and they were preaching. And they said, now here's what these people do. Here's what these people do, don't believe in the Herald of Truth. Now keep the logic. Why is the Herald of Truth scriptural? Because we're taking care of orphans this way. Well, if you say you shouldn't take care of orphans that way, an organization, then you're opposed to taking care of orphans. And this preacher was telling, here's what happens to guys like Radke. A young woman has a little baby. She can't care for the little baby. It's 12 below zero. 2 feet of snow on the ground. She wraps it up in a blanket. And she knows that Richard's coming to work at about 8 o'clock. She puts it right in front of the door. This anti-preacher comes up and he sees that kid. What? He just kicks it off in the snow. We don't take care of orphans around here. That's what they're all about. That's what we went through. Day after day, going through stuff like this. That's what they charged us with. We don't believe in taking care of orphans. See? Now, stop right here. This won't take long, but let's get our Bibles out. And let's see what the problem really is. I want to teach you in just a short period of time what this whole problem was as we look at it. As we look at this, we find two examples in the Bible of one church sending to another church. There's two examples. But here it is in New Testament times. We know that every church functioned under its own elders. And over there at the right in Peter, he said, the elders therefore among you I exhort, whom a fellow elder and a witness to the suffering of Christ, and also a partaker of the glory that will be revealed, shepherd the flock of God which is among you. Now I want you to stop for a minute. And I want us to preach to Steve and Oliver and Jean. What will you tell them? What will you tell them when they come up and they say, tell us what the Bible says is our responsibility? What are you going to tell Oliver? Oliver, shepherd the flock throughout the United States? Or are you going to say, shepherd the flock which is among you? Every eldership to oversee that one flock. That's settled. That's Bible language. That's it. Now the Bible gives two examples of churches cooperating to help each other. One church sent relief to many churches in need. This will be easy for us to see. There's only two examples, so let's see if we can get them. Here in Acts 11 is the first example. And in those days, prophets came up from Jerusalem to Antioch. Then one of them, named Agabus, stood up and showed by the Spirit that there was going to be a great famine throughout all the world, which also happened in the days of Claudius Caesar. Then the disciples, according to his ability. Now stop. Where are these disciples? They're at Antioch. Determined to send relief to the brethren dwelling in Judea. Now, there were several churches in Judea. This also they did, sending it to the elders by the hands of Barnabas and Saul. Now, anything hard about that? The church up there at Antioch took up this collection, and they sent it down to the brethren who were in need. They sent them relief down in Judea. They sent it to the elders of the churches that were down there. That's it, period. That's it. I've got note up there. One church, Antioch, sent relief to many churches in Judea. They did not send it to some large church so that church could oversee the funds in doing some big work in some other part of the world. They sent to the churches in need. That's it, period. That's all it was. They just sent to the churches in need. Now, that's one example. Got it? Let's try another one. This example is where many churches were helping one church that was in need. It's just the opposite. So here we have now, in these verses, tells us about this. In 1 Corinthians, Paul then said, "Now concerning the collection for the saints, as I have given order to the churches of Galatia," see, it's plurality, "so you must do also. On the first day of the week, let each one of you lay by him in store, storing up as he may prosper, that there be no collections when I come. And when I come, whomsoever you approve of your letters, I will send to bear your gift to Jerusalem." Now, it's many churches in Macedonia sending to one church down in Jerusalem. That's all there is to it. There's no other complications. Paul said this about it in Romans. He said, "And now I'm going to Jerusalem to minister to the saints, for it pleased those from Macedonia and Achaia to make a certain contribution for the poor among the saints who are in Jerusalem." Several churches sent to Jerusalem to take care of the poor. And so you say, well, where's the complication? There is none. There is none. Then Paul describes and tells the reason why. He tells these churches doing this, sending. He said, "For I do not mean that others should be eased and you burdened." I'm not telling you churches to send them money so you will make it life easy for them and a burden on you. He said, "But by equality." I want there to be an equality, a lack of need. "That now at this time your abundance may supply their lack, that their abundance may also supply your lack, that there may be equality." So you say, what's hard? Nothing. No. Church who has the ability to send to a church that is in need, send them money. You take care of the need, and then some of these days, you might be in trouble, and they can send you some money. That's God's plan. That's all there is, those two examples. Now, here's a Bible plan in action. It just happened last month. Here it is we have down in Louisiana. You remember that flood that was down there, and several churches sent down to them. Here's a letter that the elders sent out. They said, "Dear brother, we feel a compelling need to write this letter. The response to the needs of our 14 families who were flooded during the great flood of 2016 has been overwhelming. We're trying to be very wise by using these funds, focusing on needs and not extras and luxuries, and we have a stack of checks that have not been used. Please do not send any more checks. Again, we plan to return all unused checks and funds that are not needed. We don't think we will need to use too many more checks, but we have been enlightened concerning the unknown cause of the flood devastation. They have more in that letter. They needed $500,000 that was immediately sent. Then lots more, many hundreds of thousands, I guess, were sent. And now then, they're sending it back. Raleigh White told me that Church in Quincy sent them several thousand, and he said they didn't need it, and they sent it back. This is how church is supposed to act. This is what the Bible teaches. It's just very plain. Now, this is what it was all about, that chart I've got down there. The thing it was all about is where I got that black area where those sponsoring churches, or whatever you want to call them, were up there doing that. Now, it's called sponsoring churches because one church sponsored or take control of the work of other churches. This is their name that they used. It is called centralization because many churches centralize their funds. It's called institutionalism because churches turn their work over to human institutions. And then finally, they use these things to do other things not authorized in the Bible and even change the way we interpret the Bible. So it got down that we couldn't even interpret the Bible alike. Next week, we'll conclude this series and bring this history lesson up to October 9th, 2016. That'll be that date. This will show why Woodinville is an issue and many churches in the area are not. We'll take a look at it and see what's happened from 1952 to 2016. And we'll see that it's turned out and come up to be churches of Christ. Went right on. Many, many liberal churches came into existence. Many extremely liberal churches. And then there were several churches like Woodinville that was in between, conservative and liberal. And that's the period of time that we're dealing with now. But these churches up there are not an issue anymore. These churches down here are not an issue anymore. The only thing that you hear about is, well, what about the Woodinville Church? The Woodinville Church is just one congregation that stands in the place of hundreds of congregations throughout the land, and we'll close our series next week by talking about that. Should you be here tonight and your life is not right with God, if you need to make it right, we'd ask you to respond while we stand and sing this invitation song.